Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of December 7th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. How's it going, man? You all rested and ready to go here after 2 weeks?
Man, I am so rested and so ready to go.
2 weeks, it seems like a lot happened in those 2 weeks that we weren't not doing a show.
I know. It's like as soon as you say we're gonna pause 2 weeks, it's like somebody steps on the accelerator. Hey, those guys that think we're taking it easy. Of course, we got it's odd because there was a lot going on last week, and then all of a sudden this week started out slowly.
Very slowly.
And yeah, I'm at work, and I think I did one story on Monday, and it was just like that kind of week. It kind of picked up towards the end of the week, but it picked up speed real quick.
yeah, and we're rolling now. So on this week's show, we've got an interview with former NPB great Tuffy Rhodes, and we're going to talk about Kenta Maeda and the MVPs and more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, well, this is a guy who truly needs no introduction to NPB fans, and I love the offseason because we can actually bring in some of these legendary players and talk to them. A lot of the guys we've done from the past, including Greg Boomer Wells. And
we had LaRocca last year, did we not?
And we had Greg LaRocca in there, and we had a lot of good players.
We had Aaron Guile the other day.
Yeah, a lot of guys who have been in NPB and have done a lot of great work and great things here. And it's good to do this in the off season. And I had a nice long chat with Tuffy, and he's a guy who coined the phrase Blackanese to describe how he feels about his adopted culture, which I really thought was really, really a clever thing. Because that's my thing, is making up these little words and phrases. And I thought that was I always really liked that phrase that he made up about himself. And he told me before we actually started the interview that he would have returned to Oryx after the 2009 season. But situations changed and he didn't come back. So he ends up finishing with 464 home runs in Japan over 13 seasons and had more than 1,200 RBIs. He was one of the sluggers who got close to breaking Sada Haruo's single season home run mark before getting pitched around. And you'll hear about that in the chat. And it's a long chat, about 20 minutes, but it's the off season and we tend to go longer with these things. So especially since we have fewer shows. So let's get to it. All right, it's my pleasure to talk to Tuffy Rhodes, who is in the Independent League. What team is it that you play for again? Because I know the name is so long.
it's the GRN Toyama Thunderbirds.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. We're so glad to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so what was your first season like being back in Japan after so long?
It was tough, you know. Retiring at 41 goes without saying, and then actually coming back turning 47 during the season. So, you know, and really not working out or doing anything for the last 5 years prior to coming back. So it was tough in the beginning, but, you know, towards the end, July and August, I got a pretty good swing going, but I just wish that my body, you know, muscle-wise and just conditioning-wise would have been a lot better.
I can't say that I know how it goes because of basketball, but I do a lot of running still. I still like to do distance running, and, you know, I know how it goes. I know how,
right.
you know what you can do, and you know what you should be able to do, and what your limitations are.
Yeah, you know, the mind and the body is two different things, man, you know. Your mind, you can do anything you want to do at 21, but the body reminds you that you're not 21 anymore.
Well, I tell it is, so... That's why I end up with injuries.
Yeah.
All right, so what's important?
Like I would say the same thing, but, you know, when I was 21, I was able to dunk a basketball. Now I can barely just grab the nets.
Like, bring that goal down where it's supposed to be.
yeah, right, I know.
When did they raise these things? All right, what's important to know about playing in the indie leagues in Japan that you learned this year?
Well, you know, the one thing that's important, that those kids are younger and they're not advanced as the MPB players. So the biggest thing that I would say is that from a coach's point of view, it would have to be patience. Yeah, that's one thing I really had to learn. You know, I always thought as a player, I never thought as a coach. So I had to remind myself about patience.
And I mean, I know that you were coaching, you were a player coach. I mean, were you a hitting coach or just a bench coach?
I was the bench coach, which slash did everything. I helped with the outfield, helped with the hitting part. You know, I went through BP, man. It was actually the coaching part was real cool for me.
Yeah. What I mean, I know I heard your press conference, and I know you wanted to come back to Japan. You were anxious to get started in that, but what really made you dust everything off and say, you know, I want to play and I want to do this coaching thing here in Japan?
Well, Yoshioka, you know, longtime teammate. We've been teammates and friends for a long time. We went to Vegas together, man. We hung out, always kept in touch. And he's always said to me one day if he become a manager, you know, he wanted me to coach with him. And that's probably the number one reason why I came back. Of course, I love the country of Japan, and once I got back to Japan, I realized how much I really, really missed it. But, Yoshioka was the fighting force or the driving force to get me to come back to Japan.
All right. Excellent. Now, I know that when you teach things, you learn because you gain more knowledge because you have to explain it. And in this player coaching role that you had, what things did you learn about baseball? I know you just told us that you learned more patience, but what did you learn about baseball?
Well, you know, the thing about baseball and being a coach and, you know, being on the top of the pyramid, I guess to say, is that you really have to, you know, practice what you preach in order for people to believe in you or understand what you're trying to do, you know. Verbal conversation with some people just don't cut it. You have to be visual. It's very important. And so I had to show a lot of people the right way, or the way that I thought was the right way to do things to be successful in playing baseball in Japan.
I like the way you phrased that, the thing you thought was the right way, because I know that's important, that certain ways aren't right for everybody. How much did that impact what you were teaching these guys?
You know, and I was taught at a young age from a coach, is that everybody's not the same. You know, I don't care. You can look at, even start with my batting stance. What makes me feel comfortable, I guarantee you there's not two or three other guys in the world that can hit the way I hit. You know, so the thing about it is what I had to do is that realize that everybody's not the same at all. So I had to, you know, there's some guys you can yell at and be tough with. There's some guys that you can not yell at all, and some guys are in the middle. So I had to learn to teach each individual kid or each individual player what was best for them to be successful in baseball.
That's interesting because, you know, Julio Franco obviously played in the Indy Leagues this year, and he's got the most unique stance I think anybody's ever seen.
Yes. Unbelievable. I mean, and even he has his two fingers. He just had two fingers. His bottom two fingers were his point finger and his middle finger are the only two fingers that touch the bottom of the bat. And people don't know that, man. And, you know, I tried at just holding a bat and how difficult that is just even – to hold a bat, let alone swing a bat.
Yeah, he's really strong, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Even at 50, whatever he is. Yeah,
I thought he was 60, but I heard found out he was 56. So.
Yeah. Well, I won't tell him you said that.
Well, no, I mean, I just heard, you know, people, I still think it's amazing, you know, just the fact that this guy is 56, 60 years old playing baseball, period, is amazing. And the way he look and the way he move around, I think it's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. When I met him, I said, you know, physically, if you're walking behind him, you'd think he was, you know, maybe in his late 20s, early 30s because of the way he moves, just like you said. Yeah. Yeah, amazing guy. But I won't tell him that you said he looks 60.
I didn't say he looked.
I know. I'm teasing. All right. So, hey, I haven't changed, man. I haven't changed. So, now you're playing with a lot of young players and and I'm sure you see a lot of players in the States. What would make them successful playing in Japan, you think?
First of all, we all have the gift to play baseball. We all can pick up a bat, a ball, gloves, it all goes out saying athletic part or ability. But the number one thing is mental. You have to be mentally tough to play baseball in Japan. America, we play baseball, they try to keep it as simple as possible. I call it checkers. But in Japan, it's more like chess to me. You know, it's the seventh game of the World Series, and that's how they play every game in Japan. You know, bunting in the first inning Well, hell, in America, bunting the first six innings, it's not even heard of. But, you know, from here, the start of the game, the first inning, they'll bunt the guy over to second base, you know, and put the pressure on the third and fourth hitter because they truly believe that the third and fourth hitter are the best hitters on the team. So they want that to be recognized and known.
Yeah, I always joke that they bunt before they get anybody on base.
It's unbelievable. I mean, when I was playing with the Buffaloes, I watched teams bunt bases loaded, no outs. And I was thinking, wow, you know, I could never imagine even doing anything like that. But the good thing about it, well, what made me so successful, I think, is that everything that I knew in baseball in America, before I even got to Japan, I said I was going to throw it all away and learn how to play baseball in Japan. So, you know, as surprisingly as that was, man, it just, you know, I come to expect everything that can happen in Japan because Nantoka baseball is exactly what Japanese baseball is, whatever it takes.
Yeah, and I see guys come over here year after year, and some have success and some don't. And like you said, everybody has that physical ability, but and I'm sure a lot of it is mental too. But you know, you said it. It's more like chess. In fact, it's more of a four or three dimensional chess game because there's so much going on with each pitch and everything changing. What was the thing that helped you really? I mean, you said you threw everything about the way Americans play baseball. You threw that out. But what really helped you adjust when you got here?
Well, first of all, from the coaching standpoint, Coach Issei, but I was, you know, I try to tell guys in America, you know, 2-0, 3-0, 3-1, yeah, 90% of the time you're going to get a fastball. It's a fastball league. Over here in Japan, you know, don't be afraid to sit on a breaking ball. So I had, my plan was each at bat was a different plan for me. It depends on the pitcher, it depends on the situation. But I went up there sometimes, man, and I looked for six curveballs. I look for curveball every pitch. You know, I look for forkballs every pitch. I look for fastballs every pitch. And I also change. I'll go from a fastball to a forkball to a curveball, three different pitches. You know, I wasn't afraid to make the adjustment because I knew that was going to be the only way that I'd be successful in Japan because Japanese baseball is nowhere near the same as baseball in America. And hell, it kind of it does you a favor when you see a 94 mile an hour fastball, a guy throw right by you, but you get a good swing on it, and then the next pitch he throws you a 70 mile an hour curveball or a 82 mile an hour changeup, and you know, I was telling myself, thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, I heard that from Randy Bass as well. All right, so your career, you talked about it. You had a very rich career in Japan. You had a lot of achievements and special moments. What are some of the things that stand out for you sometimes when you're sitting around thinking about your career in NPB?
Just that first thing and foremost is just the life and the experience of playing with the Kentetsu Buffaloes, man. That changed my life, you know. Yeah, I was blessed to be, you know, because I think about it all the time. You know, I started out slow, and I was thinking, man, if I played with the Giants or Hanshin and started out slow like this, I probably wouldn't be here but 1 year. So, you know, just the blessed part of being in the right place at the right time. You know, I consider the Kentucky Buffaloes somewhat like the Minnesota Twins. Very successful organization, but not a lot of fame, you know, during my era. And that's the one thing I was blessed about. But what goes without saying is the 2001 season with the 55 home runs, the Pacific League championships, and getting to the Japan World Series. That was top three of all time being over there in Japan.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, I mean, that season that you had the chasing the single season homer run record of Sadaharu Oh, what was that like for you?
Man, it was, you know, it was an out-of-body experience. It was unbelievable. It was pressure. It went by so fast, but you know, it was everything that you can possibly wish for in a great season. You know, being the MVP and helping your team win the championship in your league. What more can you ask for?
Now you didn't ultimately reach it. Tell me how that went down the stretch. I mean, we know about Alex Cabrera and turning. I think it was Alex Cabrera turning the bat around, and because they wouldn't pitch.
Yeah, left-handed. Yeah, that was him. Went to the mound to the plate, left-handed, and we still didn't pitch to him. You know, I was okay. What bothered me the most was the Dyer Hawks, because I had 55 against Sable in Osaka Dome, and the next three to four games was against the Hawks, and we did a press conference and everything with Sadahata O and signed me and him both signed baseballs, and the thing about it is how hard it is to actually hit a home run, let alone against the Dyer Hawks, who is one of the best teams, or now the Sobe Hawks, one of the best teams in all of Japan, and the best pitchers that they had, that they would do that and try to blame it on different people in the organization. You know, one person said it was the catcher's coach. The other person said this. Oh, Sadahata O said he didn't know. Everybody knows that. As a manager, you know everything that goes on. So, but that's one of the sad things that I had about playing baseball in Japan, is that the fact that they didn't pitch to me, and but I didn't let the whole country, I didn't hold the whole country against it. I mean, against that, because I just thought it was just a one-time incident, and my experience in Japan. I mean, man, I'm a brother from the inner city of Avondale, Cincinnati, Ohio, who's over in Japan, speaking Japanese now, in a country who's changed my life. So there was nothing bad about it. I can't say, there's no place that everything is good, but, you know, just that one incident when the Dyer Hawks didn't pitch to me, that was really one of my lower points in Japan at the time.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, you know, we always feel, as fans and as reporters, that it's not fair, but we know that the players talk about the fact that challenging one another is why you compete. And so when we see something like that, we just, you know, we gasp. But of course...
Yeah, you know, it's funny about that, because, I mean, I got back to Japan after 5 years. That happened in 2001, and it's 2015, and people are still talking about that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's kind of, you know, kind of not funny, but kind of, you know, like, you know, I know, but... You know, what can I do about it? You know, people still talked about it over and over and over again after all this time.
Well, especially, you know, in 2013, Vladimir Coco Ballantyne finally broke through and got to the record. Now, I'm sure you heard about that. What were your thoughts when you saw him do that?
Well, first of all, congratulations, you know, and I'm glad that, and a good thing that Japanese baseball is evolving, you know, but at the same time, you know, I wish he had the chance to do it on a winning team like O did, like I did, like Cabrera did, you know. But, you know, he can't help. He had no control of where he play at. But at the same time, I'm happy for him. But at the same time, I wish his team would have won also.
Yeah, that's what we talked about. But, you know, he still came out of it with an MVP, and that part of it was good for him. So personally, he had a whole lot of success. Now, we had
the MVP would never win. There'd never be a last place team, you know.
Never be a last place team, and never be an import from a last place team.
Right, exactly. So, well,
that's
a good thing.
So it was a really a coming out party, I think, for Japan at that point. So now we had the candidates announced for the Hall of Fame, and we talk about it every time this time of year, of course. So how do you feel about the Hall of Fame and making it in someday?
Well, I would be lying to you if I say that I didn't want to make it into the Hall of Fame. My numbers speak for itself. I can go on and on and on about things that I've accomplished there that no other person accomplished, you know.
Right.
Compare me, you can get people, there are people who did 500, 600 home runs in 22 year careers. I hit 460 or 465 in 13 years. I'm not saying that there's not nobody who got to 460 as fast as me, but I'm pretty sure O did, and Nomura. But I would love to see people accomplish my numbers in the years that I did, as opposed to them playing 15, 20 years or so.
Yeah, and being the marked man and the import in the lineup who people are trying to pitch around.
Yes, you know, yeah, so, I think my numbers speak for themselves, but once again, I'm to the point to where I don't worry about anything I can't control. You know, it's not going to change my success in Japan, but at the same time, you know, without winning a championship, it would probably be for the whole country to know, not just the Osaka Buffalo fans, the Giant fans, but the whole country would know what I did for the country without winning a championship and the numbers I put up being in the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
And everybody would recognize me.
I think so. All right, last one. We'll let you get inside and get into the warm weather out there. Yeah. You know, we've been asking a lot of players and ex-players, and so I'm going to ask you too, since you had some experience coaching, what's your level of interest in managing, especially here in Japan someday?
Man, if you'd ask me that question from 2009 to 2014, I would have said I would not want to be a manager at all, maybe at the most a hitting coach. But I am 100% certain, without a shadow of a doubt, that I would love to manage in Japan. More so Japan than anywhere. I mean, I would take a coaching job if it was a good situation here, but my goal is to manage or be a coach in Japan one day.
Interesting. Well, we're supporting you, and hopefully, you know, we'll see you doing that.
Oh, that'd be great, man. You know, the only thing I worry about is getting thrown out of the game, so I have to pipe it down as a coach. I learned that this year. I learned that this year too. So, he told me some good things about how to coach and how to be a coach, and realize that it's not just, you have to have a lot more patience as a coach as opposed to being a player.
Interesting. Yeah, I would probably get thrown out too.
I leave the country and get thrown out of games over there, but there's no, they can say that, you know, if that's a bad thing, but no one ever doubted the dedication and the passion that I had to help my team win at any chance, at any cost.
All right, well, you keep that passion going, and you're going to be playing next year again with the Thunderbirds?
God willing, I hope. I'm on this 3-month workout period, and I hope everything goes well to where these knees and this back and this 47-year-old body can hold up, but my plans are to come back, and definitely coach 100%, but I want to play also too, 100%.
All right, well, good luck, man. We look forward to seeing you.
All right, thanks, man. Thanks for the call, John, man. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you for the time. We appreciate it.
All right, take it easy, man. You'll be hearing from me soon.
Okay, happy holidays.
All right, thanks. Take care.
All right, get warm. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Tuffy. Damn, it was good to hear your voice.
Yeah, it was fun. He was, you know, he didn't get good reception with his phone, and he had to go outside.
Oh, that's what
in his garage or something. Was. And he's in Cincinnati, so it's pretty cold over there at the moment.
He's not in Houston. He was in Cincinnati.
And so
what's up with that?
He's home, man. So it was, like I'm saying, it was cold. So I wanted to get him in out of the cold, but you know, he answered all my questions, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Tuffy. So, what are the things that stood out for you?
You could ask what didn't stand out, because that was an excellent interview. I think I thought that great questions. So congratulations to you on that. Great listen. Oh, I don't know. I guess the chess ball was interesting, you know, because we've been through it. And one thing I love about Tuffy, or at least when I say I like about him, it means we see eye to eye.
You know, I like when he agrees with me.
Exactly. When he doesn't, well, you know, everybody has the right to be wrong sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes, and that's just too bad for them.
That's, yeah, their name is John Gibson. So,
all right, yeah, cheap shots in the winter. Okay, all right, get them while you can.
It's hockey season. Okay. All right. So anyway, yeah, about what I want to say is the bit about the ball, the game, and the thinking, and the plotting, and the, you know, thinking too much about everything. And the thing is, and he doesn't say thinking about too much. And what he said was put pressure on, and, you know, and he gives credit to the fact that it's not random. And it's not doing it just because everybody else is doing it. There is actually a method to this madness. And it, you know, I hate to say it, but it kind of, all the research I've done shows it kind of works. And I can't explain why it works, but it does work. Mm-hmm. So I love his...
You're talking about the Japanese style of baseball.
Yeah, the bunting. All the bunting in particular. Now, that he takes that approach where it's not like what I'm used to, but you just gotta go with it and know what they're gonna do and not let it bother you, because again, the thing is what I like about him is that he's not condescending about it at all, and that's very hard for people to come out of the major leagues not to be condescending about things that aren't the same the way they are in the majors.
I think Tuffy
pulls that off well.
Yeah, I think that's been the case for a while, and that especially since we've seen so many imports come over and fail, that at first they come over here looking down on the sport.
Sure.
And then they come here looking sideways at the sport, and then they leave looking up.
Yeah, going like, hey, what's going on here? I know, and then, Bob Horner, Bob Horner famously said they don't play baseball in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know what? 2 years later, Bob Horner didn't play baseball anywhere.
Some would say that he didn't really play in Japan either.
Well, he did hit a few. He didn't hit the 50 mark that they put on his uniform. But and I guess the interesting thing is about, you know, you and I have talked ad nauseum about the home run record and how it is, and I that's my little Wakui thing. Oh, and I.
Oh, and I.
So, oh, and I think this. Oh, and I said talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
So, my attitude on that is, yeah, did Owen know his pitchers were pitching around him? Yes. Did he want them to pitch around him? No. But he wasn't going to come out and embarrass them and say, you know, take them to task in front of the world, because that wasn't his style. His style was to fire the coach after the season for saying stupid stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I looked into the database at the office, actually, and I found some fine stories from 2001 in the database on those on that particular game and on the last games of the season. And, they were still there. And so I did some reading up on that, how that finished out and how that played out, at least in that particular game. And then it looks like after that particular game that he was talking about, that he had two games against the Oryx Blue Wave. And it's so weird to say these things because the teams have changed and the names are everything.
Yeah, okay, good. You did well with that. I stumble on that all the time.
Yeah, they're all conjugated and meshed together now. But he had two games against the Oryx Blue Wave to close out the season, but he didn't get he didn't hit one out. And that was at Kobe Green Stadium, which is now known as Hotomoto Stadium in Kobe,
it's funny you mention that, because Cabrera had also games against Oryx in Kobe, and he was so frustrated that he couldn't see straight. he couldn't see straight because they threw him. He absolutely didn't expect. You know, he was looking outside, farther outside, that they threw pitches right down the middle, and he didn't swing because he was so shocked. And then told me after the game, they wouldn't throw me strikes. He says, no, they threw you strikes when you weren't looking for them.
Right, yeah.
But he was completely out of his, you know, it had become so surreal that you couldn't tell which way was up and which was, what was in and what was out. The world had turned upside down by that point. And that's the thing that Tuffy was complaining about, is that it got to that point.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, his feelings about O stood out to me. And you know, the honest desire to want to receive the acknowledgement and be inducted into the Hall of Fame, that was the other thing that stuck out for me. And, obviously he wants to be in.
Oh, you know, sure.
He deserves it. And
who doesn't?
Yeah, we can only hope that he gets the votes. You know, the votes come his way eventually. But
in 2 years, I'll be able to vote, so then we'll see. I'll start that dialogue. I'll be the pebble that starts the avalanche or something.
Let's hope. And, yeah.
Or maybe not. Maybe not.
Well, maybe you can be the little snowball that gathers.
Are you calling that rolls, snowball?
That rolls down the hill and becomes a big snowball. No, I'm not calling you a snowball. Just don't melt. Just don't melt on me. But
there's always that race thing.
Yeah, huh? Race? I see no colors. Anyway, his feelings about O, and obviously he had the high road attitude, and he took that high road attitude here in this interview.
Mm.
But you can tell that it pains him, you know. And I really appreciate what he said about, hey, you know, you can't let one incident color your entire experience and frame it or stain it even. It's there, you know, it's there, but overall the entire experience was great. And you heard what he said about the whole year in particular, that 55 home run season. Mm. You know, it was great. They won a championship, they went to the Japan Series. They didn't win it, but you know, and I was looking, I went to look up because you know, he talks about the Toyama Thunderbirds in the BC League, and his skipper with the team is Yuji Yoshioka.
That's
who's
right.
A former teammate. And so I went and looked up that game because I wanted to know what Yoshioka's role was in that game where they had the walk-off home run. I think it was Kitagawa who hit the home run, this grand slam.
That was the pennant winning game.
That was the pennant winning game.
I was there, baby.
Game. Okay, the pennant clinching game. It was Yoshioka who led off that inning. Yes. Well, I didn't know what his role was. I just went back to.
It was very confusing because I think Oryx is either it was a starting pitcher or a relief pitcher in that game was also Kitagawa.
Oh, okay.
So there was a lot of confusion in that game.
Yeah. Well, so they had this was September. It was in September when they clinched, and this was the pennant winner, and they were playing. I believe it was Oryx.
Oryx. It was Oryx. And, that part
and it was at
Osaka Dome.
And they were down by 3 runs in the ninth inning, and they get a walk-off grand slam it's a walk-off pennant clinching grand slam home run by Kitagawa. So anyway, you know, Tuffy, obviously that was something, you know, he went on to experience this situation with O and the Daiei Hawks, and he still had the chance to get the home run. So he didn't hit him, you know, and that was the thing, and he ended up tied with Oda and that season, and that still stays with him. But you listen to him and you hear how glad he is to be back, and him talking about the fact that he wants to come back and manage and wants to do it in Japan.
I'm not surprised at all. I'm surprised that he didn't come back earlier, because I knew that was there, and I knew how much affection he had for Japan. And so I was always surprised that he didn't come back somewhere, you know, even if not with Oryx.
Mm-hmm.
So I was surprised that long story short, yeah, I wasn't surprised to see him. I guess I was surprised to see him come back after all this time, figuring, well, if he's not going to do it now. But I'll tell you one thing about Tuffy's season. I could tell you many, but I'll tell you one thing about Tuffy's season that left a historic impact. I think a bigger impact perhaps almost than hitting 56 home runs. And you and I, and I've talked about this a lot, or I've bored you with this quite a bit, so I'll bore the listeners with this for a minute. Every year, Japan, at the end of the season, there's an award for the person who makes the biggest contribution to professional baseball.
Right.
And it's the Matsutaru Shoriki Award, which is given out by the Yomiuri Shimbun.
Mm-hmm.
My former employer and John's current employer. And basically, it used to be for the most outstanding, it was basically the most noteworthy or outstanding or laudable person in professional baseball of any sort. You know, it could be a bat boy if possible. But anyway, now it's become the it's become the Japan Series winning manager award.
Mm-hmm.
And Tuffy had a role in that. In that, when every time until 2001, that a player had had an amazing year, they won the Shoriki Award.
Right.
Ichiro won it. Matsui won it. A bunch of players won it. Managers didn't. It wasn't a manager's award. Some managers won it, sure, but it wasn't really a manager's award. It was a player's award. For the most part. And that changed with Tuffy Rhodes. No players have won it since 2000. And what happened was Tuffy Rhodes had this great season, but here we've got a foreign player hitting 55 home runs. And I'm sure whoever decided this, I should find out who actually voted on that award and get them to come clean. I don't think they will, but
Why would they do that?
Yeah, well, you never know. Hey, but I'm sure there. I'm
slip
sure
your own neck in through this noose here.
But maybe you could look up in the Yomiuri database what the Yomiuri Shimbun stories said about candidates, but they never talk about candidates who didn't win. They only name it's basically a small panel who decide on the award, and they don't talk about the people who don't win. They just talk about the winner, you know, what he did. And in 2001, the winner was a very nice, quiet gentleman whose team won the Japan Series, Tsutomu Wakamatsu. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you had a guy who tied a home run record that had been set in 1964. So it had gone 16, 17, 27 years. Is that right? 37 years? 37 years. It was tied 37 years. And nobody had touched it for 37 years. Okay, let's give it to the nondescript manager of the Yakult Swallows.
Yeah.
So that's Tuffy's. So, but now it has become the manager's award because players are controversial.
Yeah, I saw a list the other day because I noticed that the Shoriki Award had come out, and I saw this list, and you just see it. It's player, 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 and then all of a sudden it flips and it's manager, manager,
2001, manager,
skipper,
it's all managers.
Skipper, 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 skipper. So yeah, it's a really strange looking list. It's like what
stupid
happened?
Award now.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
And Tuffy's what happened.
Yeah, yeah. So. All right. Hopefully he gets in the Hall of Fame. That voting is going to be coming up. Hopefully we see him in.
It's going to be tough for him to get into the Hall of Fame this year, given the level of support. I think he had 85 votes last year, and last year he needed, I'm going to say, 246, and Saito Masaki at 243. So I don't think he's going to get that support, but I think his support will build. I think the support for him, and I'll say also Masumi Kawata, will build.
Okay. Well, we hope to see that happen, and we hope to see him managing probably after the season. The way he made it sound, like I keep reminding him I'm older than he is, and he's making it sound like he's breaking down. But he's competing against really young
guys.
Yeah,
so it made it sound like he was out there with a walker there for a minute.
Yeah, and a cane, and a white cane at that. but he sounds good. I I did get to see him for a quick second. When I made that trip this past summer out to talk to Julio, so I did get to see him, and he looks good, and hopefully he doesn't get injured in the training process, because that can happen too, and get any setbacks, and he's back here, and hopefully we can catch up with him again in 2016. So thanks again, Tuffy. Really appreciate the time, and you standing out there in the cold and chatting with us.
That's right.
All right. This is going to be a four-seam transition.
Is it?
Yeah, over to Kenta Maeda. Today I went into the office, and early on we get the breaking news beeping from Gigi, mm-hmm. and it's about Kenta Maeda being posted. So I tweeted it out right away, and the Carp gave in. They've decided to post him to the U.S.
Yeah, I'm shocked.
I kind of was shocked because they could hang on to him another year, but I have a theory. I have a theory about that.
I want to hear your theory.
He has. A couple, well, I don't know, had or has. He had a couple of nagging issues that could potentially be problematic. One was a back, mm-hmm. and one was an elbow.
Okay.
And if they keep him for this, let's say they keep him and say, well, we're going to keep you through the 2016 season. We'll think about posting you after that. And he gets his international free agency after the 2017 season. So if he gets hurt in there, they'll get no compensation, right? Really?
And he'll get, and nobody, well, I wouldn't say nobody would want him. Somebody take a chance on him for sure.
Yeah, somebody might take a chance. But so they say, hey, look, why not go? It's better to go early than to go late, even though this $20 million chicken feed sum that they get for these players.
Yeah, I'll tell you a funny story. When I wrote the story, I didn't research the story. When I translated the Kyoto sports department story for the English language Wire, I wrote that the Carp can only receive $20 million in posting fees. And the desk editor says, look, if you're not going to explain why that's relevant, I'm not going to put only $20 million. It's an insult to the rest of us.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We'll explain.
$20 million? Okay. So that was, well, yeah. So basically, yes, the old system, which I'm going to, you know, the funny thing is that when the old system, we would have expected Masahiro Tanaka to go in the area of $60 to $70 million, and at that time, in that old market, Kenta Maeda maybe 20. We was what we were talking about. Oh, he's a $20 million pitcher. Well, he's definitely a $20 million pitcher now, but because the market's changed, the market for middle of the rotation pitchers,
right,
has changed.
Right.
Those used to be $4 million a year guys. Now they're $12 million a year guys.
Yep.
Okay.
So, I'm just thinking that the Carp are thinking, hey, we didn't win with him. we might not win without him, but we can get something back and we can draft, you know, we've already drafted. Maybe we can get an import, like, you know, they hit it on Chris Johnson last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they feel like they can replace some of his production. And they said, let's go for it.
They've done well with the starting pitchers for sure. Yeah. Colby Lewis, Brian Bullington, and Chris Johnson. So yeah, actually, I was hoping to talk to the Carp assistant general manager over the weekend and ask about what the Carp's preparations for posting Maeda on, but they beat me to the punch.
They punched you with it.
Punched me to the beat. So. I'd like to add one thing, and that's that I have to give out to a shout out to Patrick Newman, who's our collaborator here on the podcast at NBB Tracker. He looked up and saw that the Carp's payroll last year was $21 million,
mm-hmm.
and $3 million of that went to Kenta Maeda.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, not quite $3 million, because $2.66 million or something went to Kenta Maeda. So basically, yeah, they're going to more than do well with that. They'll even be able to pay Hiroki Kuroda to come back, but if that were his motivation.
Yeah, as if money is going to help him pitch better.
Yeah, I don't think that. Well, he had speaking of Hiroki Kuroda, he had a great quote. I love translating Hiroki Kuroda, because he gets a little bit zen, but he has a lot of meaning in some of the things he says that are quite interesting.
And
basically, there's an expression in Japanese, which is being ready in having the heart, the technique, and the strength for the fight. And he said of that, it's just an expression, you know, and it's a shingitai. And he said of that, the heart part is the one that matters, because it drives everything else, which I thought was a great quote.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's good stuff.
Okay. Anyway.
All right. So, speaking of translations, I did a translation in the story for the paper today, and in it, the owner of the Carp came out and said something that kind of made me stop. You know, I was like, you know, why are they doing this? I was thinking as I was doing the translations, and I saw this quote come across, and he says, hey, Maeda pitched really well for us this year, blah, 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 blah. We think it's a good time and a good way to send him off, blah, 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 blah. And I've written a blog post which will appear before we actually post the show, which is kind of strange because I wrote it today. But anyway, I wrote the blog post first. Now we're recording, but then the blog post goes up and the show is going to go up later. Anyway, his one quote was, I understand that we'll have the fans backing on this, which I thought was really presumptuous and ostentatious on his part, because I doubt the fans who watched the team underachieve, particularly last year, and finish fourth with Maeda, are ready to sign up for more losing. And in fact, their last winning season before 2014 was 1996. So
yeah,
I don't
that
really.
And that was a Yeah, and that was a lousy season.
Yeah.
That was a team very much like this year's team. It was a really good team that couldn't play straight.
Yeah, and the last time they won the league title was 1991. So I don't really buy that, and I don't think that he can speak for the fans. I thought that comment was, you know, not
presumptuous. Yeah. I'll give you my take. I absolutely hear what you say, and I know I talked to some Carp fans about this the past week.
Mm-hmm.
We had a Thanksgiving party, and two of the people there were Carp fans, and I asked them about Ogata, and I've got some mixed reviews.
Got some blowback on that, I bet.
Dude, indeed. I could have dried my hair with that. Okay. The Maeda, the attitude of the fans with Maeda was, you know, he's going to go. We wish him well. You know, the relationship between – you have to understand the relationship between the fans and the players is different in Japan. It's another of those toughy things you kind of got to get used to. They're not the same. The players, the fans have so much respect for the players who are the stars on their team. And, of course, here the thing is, you know, it's not like he's going to pitch for the Giants. He's not going to go pitch for the Yomiuri Giants.
Right, exactly.
You know, gotcha. This is no Kanotake here, you know.
Right,
so he's going to go to the majors, and they're going to watch him on TV, and they're going to cheer for him, and he's still their guy.
And they're going to go to the fan. They're going to go to Mazda Stadium, and they're going to cheer for the team the way they always do.
And they're going to keep wearing. Yeah, but of course, the other cost to the Carp is that they're not going to be selling as many Kenta Maeda shirts. I'll bet they sell a good chunk of his salary in shirts every year.
Yeah, I bet that is the case. Okay,
I bet they'll be selling wherever he lands. I bet they'll be selling those shirts in their store.
Maybe if it's Carp, the Cincinnati Reds, then they won't have to change very much.
they could be called the Hiroshima Anything for a Bucks.
Well, now a seamless transition into the MVPs. And I was, like I said, I had a quick vacation and I was kind of offline a little bit and, you know, having some quiet time. And I just saw the two guys that we thought were going to win, they won the MVP awards and I didn't think much of it. And I saw the tweets and then I got back to the office and I called up the story on the database and I'm looking at the ballots and I'm like, whoa, wait a second.
Right.
What the heck? What is going on here? And I noticed that Tetsuto Yamada won in the Central League, and you know, you dominated the voting. He got 200. There were 270 valid ballots, and he got 262 first place votes. And I'm like, so you mean there were 8 Atsunori Inabas out there? There were 8 of them.
Well. Yeah, I'll tell you, I've got a theory about both of these votes.
Okay,
so
well, let me get to the Yanagita
go ahead and roll.
First. Then. So then I looked at the Pacific League, and it's Yuki Yanagita of the Hawks, and he won, and he got 211 of them. But he wasn't on every ballot. He didn't even get a second or third place.
There are people, what they're saying is there are people who either A, didn't think he was one of the three best players in the Pacific League, which I'm going to think is not the case, or B, there are people who wanted somebody else to win and therefore left Yanagita off the ballot completely. And I think that's the case.
I think that's more a more likely scenario. And I thought, you know, somebody has to die.
Well,
I know this is not. Yeah, I know this is not the environment to be saying
this.
It's never the
environment.
But, okay.
Excuse John's hyperbole. Yeah, somebody has to be.
We need to take
slapped.
Some cards away from people. Man cards, yeah. Female cards, baseball cards, their media credentials. I mean, you know, something has to happen here because if they don't know what they're looking at. Then don't let him watch it.
Hashtag high heat.
Well, I'll give you my two. Okay, the two things, and of course my gripe, and John won't really agree with this, is that my point is the MVP is about, you know, who does the best job, you know, who does the best job for their team. Period. Not a matter of what the team's needs were. Not a matter of where you batted. Not a matter of, you know, whether you hit big. You know, you hit big in the second half of the season or in this particular game that they had to beat against the, you know, the wazoo turtlenecks or whatever. So I'm not into that. But I will tell you, if you think the guy's the best player, don't vote him second at his position in the best nine. It's not a consolation prize. Okay. So that's in my ballot, the first three players on the MVP ballot, unless they're outfielders, are going to win best nine ballots. I mean, even actually, if I've got three outfielders there, that's my best nine outfield. No mistake about it. That's what I think. Okay. Yeah. So I understand people. I understand now the runner-up was Shogo Akiyama of the Cebu Lions. Now, there's the argument for that is he did something very unusual. He set, he broke an Ichiro record.
And a Matt Merton record.
Yeah, but, he's a foreigner. He's
right.
Guy played for the Tianjin Tigers, so we're not going to talk about him. but Akiyama did what he did was interesting, like, and I don't even want to degrade it by saying it's interesting, like somebody hitting for a cycle, because that's just silliness. But it's interesting. It is. It's just.
Love the cycle. I know you love the cycle.
I pedal for months to see a cycle. Okay. No, but I'm just saying it is a meaningful record, and he had a tremendous season. But MVP is silly. But if you thought that, and there may be somebody who actually thought that those hits were really important, and they're just ignorant.
Yeah.
And now, if they're ignorant, but they believe that, and they voted him first place instead of Yanagita, I can support that kind of thinking. Because they think he was actually better. And I think there are people who actually think he's better, but I also think there's the people who think, well, we want Akiyama to be the MVP, so let's screw Yanagita. Can we say screw Yanagita? Let's cut Yanagita down to size in the total points. Okay, so that's the Pacific League.
Yeah.
In the Pacific League. In the Central League, we have, Yamada getting on 262 out of 270 first place votes. That's pretty good, and I don't really have a problem with that. But the interesting thing here is that there were three voters who thought that Yosuke Kikuchi was a more valuable at second base than Yamada.
It's just wild.
Okay, so if you think he's better, how come? I don't have a problem if that's what you think. I'm kind of okay with that. If you really think that in the bottom of your heart and you watch the games and that's what you think, yeah, go ahead and vote that way. But then how come if three people thought Kikuchi was the best second baseman in the Central League, how come he got zero? He didn't even get a third place vote. He didn't get a single point in the MVP balloting. Okay, that's just okay. We're gonna vote for our guy because we're Carp beat writers. Just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that's what that is. And I think probably the same thing is going on with the Akiyama, that there were Cebu beat writers who wanted to, suck up to Akiyama, because sucking up to ball players is a pretty big industry for beat writers. It's how they
right. Yeah,
and I don't mean that in a bad way. But
no, that's just, how they a lot of times that's how they get their information.
That's how the job works. Yeah. It's, and I've seen it in practice. Yeah, I voted for you for Rookie of the Year.
I know where you're going. So yeah, the breakdown again for Yanagita, there were 230 valid ballots cast, and he got 211 first place votes, 13 second place votes, and then 4 third place votes, and that's 228. So two people decided to just cast him aside instead of cast a vote for him at all. So it's wild. I would venture to say, without looking at the numbers and the numbers inside the numbers, mm-hmm. that these two players had two of the best seasons in the long time, let's say, in NPB put together.
I would say Yamada's was a historic season, and I would put that up with almost any. I can't back this up with the numbers, but I would say that Yamada's season was historic, like it was a Sadahara O season.
Yeah, obviously. I think both of them, because you look at Yanagita and he's winning a batting title as well and beating a guy who had the hit record. The single season hit record, that was quite an accomplishment. And both of these guys had the 30-30 plus the 300 batting average. And I mean, they both put on some phenomenal seasons. Yeah. I was looking through some of the numbers, and I was going back to find out how many seasons where we had at least one guy score 100 or more runs, and then both of these players scored more than 100 runs, and I couldn't find a season.
100 runs is pretty rare in Japan.
It's pretty rare, yeah. And I had to go back pretty far to find one. I think.
You know my thinking about that. Like, get the, you know, I want to say, like, get that stuff out of your eyes and look at the game, dude.
Hashtag high. Yeah.
So they just, I just think they don't know what they're looking at, and it's favoritism, and it's other things, and there are other factors, and it's very sad because both of these guys should have been unanimous winners. But anyway,
yeah, I think it'd be hard to look for a season, you know, in which find the season in which a guy led the league in doubles, home runs, runs, on base percentage, slugging percentage, stolen bases.
Yeah.
Now that's it. But he was third in walks. He was total bases as well.
He played a pretty good second base, right?
Yeah, he was good. You know, and I'll tell you, although my numbers, we'll get to that one again. But my numbers, yeah, say he wasn't as good as the other numbers. I did a kind of a more exhaustive research. I wasted a lot of time this week looking at defensive performance.
It's never a waste, man. It's never a waste.
It was fun, but I think it was probably less. I could have spent it doing something more valuable, but it was probably less fun.
All right. Well, we got to move along, but I'm sure it was. There's never a waste when you talk about baseball. Okay. And then so I looked at the rookie voting, and I said, okay, Yasuaki Yamasaki in the Central League.
No problem.
That just totally makes sense. And then I said, what? What? You know, what the heck? Again, was it Kyohei Arihara? And we talked about it when we discussed who we thought were the top nominees for the Rook of the Year in the Pacific League. And Arihara probably finished okay, but he was nothing but a mediocre guy. And the guy we had tagged for Rookie of the Year, Akihiro Hakumura of the Nippon Ham Fighters, a teammate of Arihara, pitched almost as many innings, had almost as many strikeouts, even though he threw fewer innings. And here's the thing is I noticed that Tony Barnett got an MVP vote in the Central League, and he threw 62.2 innings, and Hakumura threw 68.2 innings, and he wasn't Rookie of the Year. So that just tells me that there's a kind of contradiction going out there in how people are calculating or reaching their
Yeah, interesting too, because oddly enough, the Pacific League Rookie of the Year has sort of had a trend in recent years, mostly driven by the Nippon Ham Fighters, of giving it to middle relievers for the Nippon Ham Fighters.
Yes, it would have made sense for him to get it. And you know, and Arihara 8-6 with a 4.79 ERA. There's just nothing that says Rookie of the Year to me.
He was 8-6, and you know what his record would have been if he had. If he had normal run support, he would have been like 5-9.
Yeah, the record to me at 8-6, how I feel about wins and losses anyway. I don't really think that much of them, but it's important because winning is important. But
I'm with you with that.
But here's Hakumura, who had 76 strikeouts in his 68.2 innings and a 2.23 ERA, and like I said, he threw more innings than Tony Barnett did. So it's just weird. I don't know how they got there. I don't know what the thinking
is. Yeah, I think it's that 8-5 starter. Yeah, I think I hear you. I've been down that road, and it's not pretty.
No, it's not. All right, some notes. The Hall of Fame candidates were announced this week, and there were some new names on the list. And I did a blog post about the fact that Kimiyasu Kudo, the SoftBank Hawks manager, is probably going to get on right away. I don't see any reason to hold back on him. I think he's going to get in on the first.
Yep, that 200 wins is a biggie.
And he's got 224. But I think more than the victories on the personal level, it's that he was involved in 14 league titles and 11 Japan Series championships. And
a couple of Japan Series MVPs in there.
Yeah, studly stuff. And then I noticed that the Oryx Buffaloes and the Rakuten Eagles dumped about 14 players each, I think it was.
No, Oryx dumped 18.
It was 18? Okay, I counted up 14.
You could field two full teams. You could play They could have an intra-squad game with the guys who got cut.
Hashtag high heat.
So that means that both of those teams, like, you know, most of the foreigners got the axe. Brian Bullington, who had an injury plagued season in 2015, Esteban Hermann, Alessandro Maestri were among the guys for Oryx, and along with Kei Igawa.
Francisco Caraballo.
Caraballo was gone.
And I'm going to give up on pronouncing Mr. Chavez's first name, but I wouldn't be surprised if Mr. Chavez is not playing for DeNA next year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The guy who came from, who was connected with Alex Ramirez's summer with Oryx.
Right.
As well as was a Caraballo, who also might end up at DeNA.
Yeah, very possible. And then
the surprise, Tony Blanco, considering he was hurt, and usually what you do with guys who are hurt is say, well, why don't you be hurt somewhere else?
I didn't see him on the list. I didn't realize that. Well, that's
but Aaron Balderas will be available again.
that's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of a shocker, and then again, kind of not. He didn't have a standout season, although he's a quality player.
He is, but he also has a history of injuries.
All right, and then the Eagles got rid of most of their foreign players, Willie Mopeña, Gabby Sanchez, highlighting that list. So we're going to have a lot of newness in those two teams, which is good. I think, you know, they drafted some players.
They did, however, keep. I guess so the question, you know, is the teams that cut all their foreign players. I mean, I understand Sanchez. He was hurt a lot. He played well briefly. He's hurt, came back, didn't do well. But the four guys they kept. I guess you can't count Fernando since he's not a foreigner. He's a Brazilian, yeah, Brazilian who played amateur ball here. Kenny Ray.
Coming back, isn't he? No, he's not cut.
Cam Michelio.
Yeah, coming back.
Zealous Wheeler.
Good to see
because he had a good second half. He had the second half I expected him to have. From April to October.
Yep. All right. Well, good luck to those teams, and they're going to be hard to actually predict what they're going to do since they're going to have so many new players out there. But it would be fun.
Well, I'll tell you, the clean sweeps work. You'd be, I think, if you looked back and you looked to see how many teams cut more than 15 players and how well they did the next season, a very large number is yes, they did well. I remember. 2003, the Hanshin Tigers, I think, cut 20 players, and they ran away with the Central League. So
scared into production there. All right.
Could be.
All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so this question comes from our sponsor, One World Sports, and they wanted to know, they said, can you explain the salary contract renegotiations each year in NPB? That would never fly in the United States, signing a contract and not knowing the bottom line number.
I hear you, because this was confusifying.
Confusification.
For John and I and everybody, and we used to have this discussion on the sports desk. How come they're negotiating a contract when the guy signed a 2-year deal for $10 million last year? Well, without going into great details, because then I would be at risk of talking about something I don't really understand. And we're going to have somebody on the show in the next couple of weeks who does understand this stuff. Itaru Kobayashi is slated to talk in the next 10 days or so. Itaru Kobayashi is the former... I don't try to explain is the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks front office structure. it's like protoplasm. You know, there's guys over here, there's guys over there, and at one time they had three people who were known as the general manager. One was Kobayashi, I think. One was a Gori-san, who's maybe the general manager, maybe not. There's another guy, so. People would go to see the Hawks and say, I talked to the general manager, and I'm going, oh, yeah, no, I don't even know that guy's name. So that's Japanese baseball often. So anyway, Itaru Kobayashi, who basically used to do salary discussions with players, will explain a few details. But to briefly explain, what looks like chaos is not really chaos. It's the product of a system – in which every player has to sign a one-year contract with every team, mm-hmm. with his team. Okay, now that contract, what goes into that contract is beyond the scope of, is not observable. Okay, so first of all, players who have no rights for free agency, basically their only right is to not have their pay cut by a certain amount. Okay.
Meaning a guy might sign a contract and he'll say, okay, my contract, there's a range of, you know, it can be cut from 20 to 30%, but that's exactly.
And until you have rights for arbitration in the major leagues, it's exactly the same. They can pay you whatever the heck they want to pay you.
Right.
Of course, you know, they're not there to alienate you or look stupid in the press or look cheap. Well, although they manage to do that anyway.
I was going to say they do all those three of those things. They just do it really deftly.
No, they still look cheap and alienate people pretty well, especially if they're in South Florida.
Hashtag high heat.
Anyway, so that's the basic structure. Every player has a one-year contract with his team. That never changed. Now, how do you have a multi-year contract in that situation, which we have in Japan? What they have is personal service contracts. Whoever, you know, pitcher player A will sign a multi-year deal that will say the team will hire you under these conditions and will pay you these amounts and these conditions. And those conditions are essentially never made public other than the year and perhaps an estimate of the total value.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we'll see that it's going to pay this much this year and this much next year. But very often you see a guy who signs for example, a 3-year, $21 million deal, and the first year is 7, and then we find the next year is 4. And it's a what the hey? But mm-hmm. there are conditions in that personal service contract that we are not privy to.
Right.
So that's what I would like to say, is that it's not the case of these guys are signing multi-year deals and don't know what they're going to get paid. It just say that we don't know what the conditions are. It's not as cut and dried as it is in the major leagues. But again, Itaro Kobayashi will be able to shed more light than I can on this without calling anybody's agents any names. Because he said he wouldn't mention any names.
Okay, good. Good. We don't want to have them calling us. All right.
Unless they're with questions on MP3s, then call in, please.
Okay, exactly. All right. And anyone who has any of those questions, send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com. You can tweet us at #highheat. @JBW Podcast, or leave us a note on the Facebook page. We will see you in a couple of weeks, and Jim is off to the winter meeting, so have fun, have a safe trip, and get lots of information, and be careful over there.
I will.
Good. All right, enjoy your off season. One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.